I don't know who would do this to a six-year-old child. I can't conceive of it. It's beyond the realm of reality. We think we gave it our best effort to bring him back. I just wish it had a happier ending.
Adam evidently was too good for this world. He was much greater than this world.
This person is fully capable of doing it again.
What's up, guys? It's your girl Ginger, the true crime queen. I'm reminding you now that listener discretion is advised. The dark nature of the show is not suitable for young ears or those that are sensitive to graphic material. But without further ado, let's get it. What's up, guys? Welcome back to part two in the tragic, but in a way, still inspirational story of Adam Walsh. We left out at a pretty high point in the story. John and Reve had just co-founded the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, as well as having their second boy, Callahan, in 1987. So we'll hop right back into the story in 1988 when this quite literal tool, Otis Tool that is back on his bullshit, fucking with the Walshes and wasting the Hollywood Police Department's time. As usual. So I was reading on ABC, actually, that this asshole Otis seems to have showed his true fucking colors back in 88 when he decided to personally send John Walsh a letter demanding that they somehow give him $5,000 while he's in jail, all in exchange for the location of Adam's remains. Like, really, dude? That's a fucking scam if I ever saw one. Honestly, I think Otis doesn't know shit about who really killed Adam. And I will back that up a little further on down the line, but surprise, surprise, when investigators come back to Jacksonville, where at this point Otis is actually sitting on death row because of all his other confessions. I mean, clearly he had nothing better to do, but yet again, he decides to act as if he doesn't know anything about the case. This asshole. In the meantime, though, John is making strides.
This is America's Most Wanted, and I'm John Walsh. Tonight, we'll ask for your help with one of the Justice Department's top priority cases, and we'll re-examine a case with $1 million reward. But first, a story of love and passion in the hills of West Virginia.
Next thing we know, John is updating us every single weekend for the next 20 fucking years, showcasing the top 10 assholes of the country and who to exactly stay the fuck away from. In the background, he's still somewhat looking for any true, real evidence of his own son's killer. And because John Walsh and his son's Adam case had impacted the public so heavily, in 1994, Walmart and other department stores began implementing what's known as a Code Adam for when a child is reported missing within the store. The process is basically if a customer reports that a child is missing, a detailed description of the child and what they're wearing is immediately obtained, and the clothing areas are watched very heavily for the possibility that someone will disguise children with clothes from the store. Additionally, all exterior access to the building is locked and monitored, and anyone approaching a door is turned away until everything's figured out. And interestingly, the child's name is not supposed to be requested and is really ignored if it's provided. I actually wonder how often this process is still used, though, because I remember when I worked in a small local grocery store, we would have to watch this super old, quite honestly terrible informational video every so often. It's called It's Not Worth Your Life, and talked about how to stay safe during a robbery, but we never once talked about the correct process of how to deal with a missing kid, which now in hindsight seems kind of bad. I hope it's still a very used process, but I would really like to know if any of my listeners have used or have been taught these steps at some place they work, or better yet, if they did and it actually worked and maybe saved someone. That very same year, though, Hayden Walsh is actually welcomed into the family, making a total of 3 siblings to Adam. John was also hosting his own talk show, The John Walsh Show, on top of doing America's Most Wanted. And he was pretty much what would seem like at the height of his career, honestly. While doing research for the case, I actually found out that way back in 1995, the general public still was very much invested in figuring out what happened to Adam. And on top of all that shit that John had sort of talked throughout the years about the investigation being so terrible, some of the news outlets in Florida State and Alabama State, interestingly, would actually attempt to sue the Hollywood Police Department for access to the files in the case, since by that point, it had gone majorly cold. It turns out that a judge did in fact allow the investigators a little bit more time to get any more information they could about the case, but when they still couldn't come up with anything from either old witnesses or Otis's confessions or anything new, the entire 10,000-page case file was then turned over to the public for everyone to feast their eyes on by 1996. So while everyone and their mom is also sort of finding out what the investigation seems to have really been lacking back in 1981, it's just another weird blow to the case when Otis was said to have died in his jail cell at the Florida State Prison on September 26th of 1996. He was 49 years old and found to have likely died from cirrhosis of the liver, but I've also seen AIDS listed as well as a cause of death. He's described as being buried within the prison cemetery, as there has been no one that came to claim his body. Now keep that in mind when we talk about Otis towards the end of the episode, because that's interesting to me. And some people might not know that this will be related in some ways, but one of the best things I remember happening on John's weekly show, America's Most Wanted, was when Elizabeth Smart was found. At 14 years old, Elizabeth Smart was abducted from her own home by some lunatic with a knife straight out of her bedroom in Utah during the summer of 2002. And she was only recovered safely when her sister actually realized she might actually know who the kidnapper was. So sketch artists were able to show a sketch on America's Most Wanted where it was recognized by family members of the person that ended up taking Elizabeth. So on March 8th of 2003, America's Most Wanted aired Elizabeth's missing story for the sixth time at that point, but this time with a photo that the abductor's family members had sent in. When two different couples who religiously watched the show were able to recognize the guy who took Elizabeth, because he was crazily enough still actually taking her out in public, but with just a disguise on, she was found within 5 days of his family member sending in the actual photos of him after the sketch that police had made was featured. Elizabeth has since gone on to become an advocate herself, just like John, for other child victims, as well as legislative work targeting human trafficking specifically, and of course, crimes against children in general. I also read that John received some flack over some comments that he had made on a press tour back in 2006. And I guess he triggered a few people when he made a joke about what he'd like to do with child predators if he was in charge. And I believe he said something to the sort of implanting some explosive devices up their asses so that when they leave the area they're supposed to stay in, that they could just hit a button and boom, the problem's solved. And of course he was joking, but people got all butthurt about it. But honestly, fuck that. It's a great idea, actually. I'm ready to endorse John Walsh for president right now. I mean, dead sex offenders don't reoffend. But seriously, if anyone can make a joke about such a dark topic, it should be John fucking Walsh. I mean, given the circumstances, I think he has the most right to say what should happen to those who hurt our children. I mean, come on. John Walsh, 2020, I mean, maybe 2024, but still, wouldn't that kind of be amazing, honestly? I would be pretty proud to call him my president. Remember that rumor about police finding some clothes at Otis Toole's mom's house in Jacksonville? Well, John did actually make that claim on America's Most Wanted one evening when some rumors were floating around that maybe Jeffrey Dahmer was the person who killed Adam. Now, I know this sounds like quite a random theory at this point in the case. Like, what the fuck? Did he kill JonBenet too? Well, in February of 2007, when the rumor mills were flooding, John went on to clarify to viewers that investigators had actually received a pair of green shorts and one yellow sandal that they believe was proof that Adam had been in Otis's mom's place in Jacksonville, which sort of put a pin in it for most people who had heard the rumor of Jeffrey Dahmer being the real killer. In an interesting twist, though, Jeffrey Dahmer's own dad actually called into America's Most Wanted and alleged that he also believed that it was possible that Jeffrey was also interested in children and did have some past charges involving exposing himself as well as masturbating at a children's park. Now, a lot of people tend to think that Jeffrey wasn't into children based on what we do know of him. But how much do we really know about any serial killer? I mean, personally, If his own dad himself said that shit, could it really be a possibility that Adam was one of the earliest victims of Jeffrey Dahmer? I mean, it's not any crazier than this guy, Otis, who's coming in saying he did kill Adam, he didn't kill Adam, he did kill Adam, he didn't kill Adam. I mean, what have they got to lose by looking into it? I'll go more into the facts that have been released about the case that inspired the Jeffrey rumors really soon. But I think because Adam's case was becoming really popular again, I mean, on top of John and Revee obviously wanting it solved, investigators officially announced that they have done a reevaluation of his case, and they decided that while they didn't have any new evidence really, they were going to officially close Adam's case on December 16th of 2008, as they were satisfied that Otis did in fact murder Adam, as he had originally confessed. It was reported that Otis's niece also had apparently come forward to John and Revee claiming that Otis did make a deathbed confession to the murder of Adam, confirming everyone's suspicions. Detectives who led the closing of the case also informed the public about a previously found roll of film from Tool's old car that they believe shows a bloody imprint in the back seat floorboard of the car, where it's believed to show the imprint of Adam's own face. Now, Revee was heard saying, "To me, it was the one thing that a mother knows is that this is their child and that this picture is their child. This is the piece of evidence that ties everything together for me, and I can go to my grave knowing that not only I did everything I could, but that I found my answers in that photo."
For 27 years, we've been asking, who could take a six-year-old boy and murder him and decapitate him? Who? We needed to know. We needed to know. And today we know. The not knowing has been a torture, but that journey's over. And a lot of horrible memories in this police department looking for that little boy. And now I think it's only fitting that it ends here in this police department. And Revee and I have had some very, very rough and rocky times. But you always never lost focus of who the real victim was. You never lost focus. You never didn't drive this train, Revee. But that little boy was the real victim.
That also came out from John on one of the many television appearances that he would end up making about Adam's case being finally closed. He mentioned something that I'm not sure a lot of people actually know, but Adam's head was actually kept inside the morgue for the entire 27 years his case was open. John and Revee had finally just received their first opportunity to bury their firstborn son. Can you imagine waiting that long to have a real fucking funeral? I mean, my God, these people have lived the most emotional roller coaster of a life I can almost fathom. I always try to link relative case photos in my Instagram posts. So if you're not following on there, make sure to hop on. But I'm going to add the photos from Adam's case that detectives believe show his face in blood in the back of this car. Revee and John obviously feel that this evidence is compelling enough to put it to rest, and that's totally fine. But in my opinion, I just don't see it. It looks like an ink blot photo. Like, it's really hard to tell. And so I'll put it out there so everybody can see if they see what she's seeing. But in the 3 years after the case being officially closed and after 24 years running every single Saturday night on the Fox network, America's Most Wanted finally comes to an end in 2011. And I gotta say, that was not a good day. I will miss that show like crazy, honestly. I want America's Most Wanted back, and I also want To Catch a Predator back. Like, where are you at, Netflix? I believe John and Revee's next plans were to actually settle down and enjoy their older years together, as they had at this point become grandparents, actually, from their daughter Megan. But men like John Walsh, though, they cannot take a break. Once you've been fighting for that long, I don't think it's possible deep down in your heart to just stop. They were victims, and he wanted justice, and they always fucking will. And this is where I, you know, just might be fucking your day up, because I want to go over why the Hollywood Police Department thinks that Otis did it. They decided on Tool based on the few corroborating statements that he was able to make about Adam's death that they resume he wouldn't have been able to derive from any other source but being the murderer himself. They say a few witnesses also think that they saw and smelled this man at the mall that day. Police can't really prove that Otis was in the area, though. Otis had managed to, finger quotes, prove which Sears Adam was taken from by police, who had decided to take him to the wrong one first just to see if he was lying, and he apparently said this wasn't the right Sears, so he got the Sears right. He was also able to instruct the police to pull off the highway into an area where he claims to have beheaded Adam, which ended up being pretty close to the area in which Adam's head was actually discovered, and police are unsure if this was just dumb luck or truth, as even they were unsure of where the scene of the murder was at that point. But it seems to be the most plausible statement being that it did happen very close to the known disposal site. But I've heard speculation that Otis might have gotten information about where the head was disposed based on the mile marker on the side of the road. So he was looking for the mile markers and might have picked a road closest to the mile marker that he was aware Adam's head was found. Not sure. I personally don't think it was Otis. First off, the dude twice confessed and twice recanted the murder of Adam Walsh, and he is quite literally unbelievable to me. Then he tries extorting John, so I'm pretty sure his motive was purely just financial or that he thought he would somehow benefit from this confession of sorts. He's not a smart man. His IQ was very low, I believe in the 80s. Secondly, how much sense does it really make that according to the killer himself, he forgot there was a severed head in his car, but then he remembered he should dispose of it only after he's burned the body in the refrigerator? On top of that, why the fuck would someone like that care to dispose said forgotten severed head hundreds of miles back towards the abduction area? I mean, this might be a little dark, but why the fuck wouldn't he have just gone back home and burned the head like he claims to have burned the entire body? Like, why? Why not drive 200 miles farther away from his house? I don't know, that just seems inconvenient for a dingleberry like Otis Tool. Numero tres? Ain't no way is Adam, 6-year-old sweet Adam, getting into a car or leave anywhere with this crusty-ass, smelly, toothless Nimrod. I've heard people describe that you can smell Otis Tool before you can see him. So are you guys seriously going to believe that a 6-year-old boy, even if he is shy, is going to walk off with some smelly, rather meth head-ish looking man? I mean, I really fucking doubt it. He was scary looking. Look him up. I will link it, but look him up. He's nasty. He is nasty. Also, he was never able to show them where the body was. And you know what? It's never been recovered. His body's never been recovered. My vote is that if it was out in the open, it was probably eaten by an alligator because, you know, Florida. And I mean, the one time I was in Florida, I for real saw an alligator just hanging out on the roadside in one of those ditches. I mean, there's pretty good chances that if a dead body's laying around, they're gonna get it down there. Otis changed his original claims from burying Adam's body in a shallow grave to burning it down to ashes with a gutted refrigerator in his mom's yard, and then shoveling out the ashes and dumping them all over the city dump. It seems like every time he kind of fucked up in a detail of the crime, he would have to change his confession to fit the evidence, or lack of the evidence in that case. Like, how convenient. I mean, the Hollywood Police Department lost all their physical evidence to prove this case. They lost the machete, they lost the carpet they cut out from the car, they even lost the entire fucking car, which it was like a 60s Cadillac. It's a huge fucking car. It's a boat of a car, you guys. The only thing the Hollywood Police Department didn't manage to lose was that roll of undeveloped film in Otis's trunk, which they said they found in a box underneath an old cop's desk. They also didn't lose Adam's fucking head because it was safe inside the morgue, away from the police department. I mean, for God's sakes, you have one job and it's to make sure the evidence is safe. Come on, come on. And basically, after years of John's total disgust with the process and the handling of his son's disappearance and then murder, I kind of feel as though there was probably a lot of pressure on that police department to get the media nightmare shut down simply because of how big John Walsh himself had actually become. The chief of police in Hollywood claims very confidently that everyone can all put Adam's case to rest, as they have thoroughly gone over the case, and despite having nothing new, they're putting all their eggs into Otis Toole's basket in that he was in fact telling the truth with his confessions, and they absolutely believe he was Adam's murderer. Then they get Otis Toole's niece to tell John Walsh about a deathbed confession that Toole had allegedly made. Well, interestingly, John Walsh has complained on Larry King about how it took the Hollywood police an entire week to even figure out that Toole had died in prison in 1996. And he said on Larry King that he was fucking pissed that no one was there to listen for a deathbed confession. So what the fuck is that about? Did he or did he not make a deathbed confession in the presence of anyone else but the so-called niece? I mean, he's in a fucking prison. If he's buried in the cemetery and his niece is there during a deathbed confession, why is his body still buried in the cemetery? Why was it not claimed? Did she just leave right after and not claim his body? What's up with that? I don't know if I personally trust this whole niece thing. But moving on to why others believe that Jeffrey Dahmer actually killed Adam Walsh. Well, the Milwaukee Monster, who's known for killing at least 17 men, we learned he did have a few lesser charges involving children. Lesser than murder, I mean. We know he didn't have a problem decapitating people, clearly. They found 11 severed heads in his apartment, so, you know, I rest that case. And it turns out he was actually discharged from the army in March of 1981, just a couple months before Adam goes missing. And Jeffrey Dahmer had requested a plane ticket somewhere warm, so he heads to South Florida, Miami Beach, actually, just a few minutes away from Hollywood, Florida, where John, Adam, and Reve are also living at the time. So he's actually working at this place called Sunshine Subs, which if you look at a map is only a 20-minute drive from the Sears department store that Adam was last seen in. It turns out there's actually a police report taken by the Hollywood Police Department on July 7th of 1981, just a couple weeks before Adam's disappearance, where Jeffrey claims to have found some body of a homeless man outside his work at the sub shop. It was back near the dumpsters, and how much money do you guys want to bet that Jeff actually killed that dude, maybe even raped him, and then called the cops himself because the dude was homeless and likely wouldn't be looked into? I would bet at least $25 on it. You hear me? For real. Also, what are the chances of one of the nation's most notorious serial killers, who is known for cutting off his victims' heads, would be dealing with random-ass dead bodies just weeks before this also very famous child goes missing? And then only his head is found. I mean, what are the chances of that? The coincidence? I think the chances are slim to none. What would you guys say? So Dahmer was actually found to have left the area of Miami Beach just after Adam's head was found to live back with his family up in Ohio, where he would go on to commit some of the more infamous crimes that he's known for, and later being arrested in July of 1991 out of his Milwaukee home. But a witness has come forward named Bill Bowen, and he was actually entering the mall when he saw a kid, he says, being forced into a blue van outside the Sears parking lot, which makes this a true possibility, as the sub shop that Dahmer happened to be working at also delivered pizzas where he had access to a blue van. Another witness has come out named Willis Morgan, who thinks that he actually followed Jeffrey Dahmer into the Sears toy department that day where Adam went missing, the same one. And he's actually come out and written a book called Frustrated Witness, because as it turns out, both of these witness accounts were never followed up on until Dahmer's arrest years later, when his photo pretty much took over every media source. Willis Morgan also has an active YouTube channel where you can hear his firsthand accounts of what he thinks happened that day, since he's positive Jeffrey Dahmer did this. Like I said, you can look him up on YouTube. His name is Willis Morgan. I believe there's even one other witness account that allegedly was able to place Dahmer on the side of the road near the site where Adam's head was later found. However, I don't know exactly if this claim is as credible as others, and I believe Willis Morgan does cover it in his book. Interestingly, a very similar kidnapping attempt had happened in the weeks prior in the same area of Florida, and they produced a sketch artist photo that looks a lot like Jeffrey Dahmer, honestly, like a shit ton. So I'll make sure to add that photo in the list of photos too. And Hollywood Police Department did actually give Jeffrey Dahmer an official interview in 1992 as a possible suspect for Adam's murder when he was arrested in Milwaukee. When they went over his prior whereabouts to see where else he had lived and, you know, might have considered Flavortown. So they did ask him about Adam, and he's always denied it. I believe for the most part, Hollywood Police Department believes him because Jeffrey Dahmer was actually very forthcoming with most of his other murders. But one other thing was also said to a different reporter by Jeffrey Dahmer, allegedly. He made a pretty ominous statement about the killer of Adam Walsh, because at that point everyone was asking him, and he goes, you know, whoever killed Adam Walsh couldn't live in prison. And to that reporter, that was sort of a confession of sorts. Which, to be honest, Jeffrey Dahmer's not a dumbass. And I think he knows that if he openly admits he's hurt children before, that he's going to die a lot quicker than he actually did end up dying. Because if you didn't know, another inmate did end up actually killing Jeffrey Dahmer in prison. But that story is for another day. So basically, Hollywood Police Department doesn't think it's Jeffrey because he's always denied it every single time investigators have asked him. Even he's like, you guys, I literally told you everything I did, even down to the ways that I cooked them. Bruh, if I killed this kid, I would have told you. And to be perfectly honest, that's kind of hard to argue with, but I think Dahmer might have learned that he needed to kill his victims to keep them silent and was also afraid of being targeted for the same reason. Basically, as far as these two suspects go between Otis and Jeffrey, we're dealing with a total liar who confesses to Adam's murder. And then we have a clear-cut suspect who's always denied involvement. That's really annoying. When we do go over Jeffrey Dahmer's case in more depth, we'll need to remember to keep Adam's case in mind when we talk about the possibility of Jeffrey being his real killer. But there's actually even more famous killers that have been suspected of murdering Adam. But I thought I would just trim it down to these two main ones, but it still ended up being a two-parter episode. Lastly, some information I found during all this research has led me to consider a few other theories or possibilities about Adam's case, and just hear me out, okay? What if this wasn't Adam's head? To be clear, the Walsh family did not identify their own son's head. Obviously, they were out of town and they had a close friend do it for them, and the head had been in water for enough time to have a very bloated face, making identification pretty hard either way. And when this family friend said they believed it to be Adam's head, it was then said to be double-checked using some of Adam's previous dental records. And it was noted that specifically one tooth was said to have a filling in it on the lower left side of the mouth, and this head that was found also had a similar filling in this tooth in the mouth. So it was then fully believed to be the head of Adam Walsh. But at that point, no forensic dentist was actually used to confirm these findings, and there's actually no necessary documents for identification purposes ever found within the entire case file that was released to the public. So between those 10,000 pages of case file, there is not an autopsy report, there's not a medical examiner's report, there's nothing. And I know there's not much of the body, there's no proof of documentation that this is Adam's head. But there's actually a photo floating around on the internet, and I'm not positive on its origin, so I'm not actually taking this as factual evidence per se, but this photo is said to show a bit of the head that was found and identified as Adam's. And when you're comparing it against this now very famous photo of Adam that you can see as the episode image, but you can tell his two front baby teeth are gone, and they were lost just days before this photo was taken. The head that was found in this photo floating around the internet shows the mouth area with a front tooth that would, to me, appear that there's very clearly a front tooth in this child's mouth. It seems like an adult tooth from the picture, but there's very clearly a front tooth in the kid's mouth. And I'm not a dentist, but it doesn't make sense that his adult tooth would have grown that much in the time frame of Adam being taken and this head being discovered. Your teeth do not continue to grow after death, from what I understand, and the possibility of decomposition raising the gums to expose the new adult tooth is valid, but it's also really got me questioning if this is even Adam's head, because we know he didn't have front baby teeth. Did that adult tooth grow all the way out in a week? I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if the image is really that of the head that they found. And if we continue down that rabbit hole, the true, real, haunting reality of this case might be that everyone stopped looking for Adam as soon as this head was identified incorrectly. And how fucking tragic would that be? I'll remind you that all the physical evidence in Adam's case has been lost. His body was never found, and thankfully his head was safe from police mishandling, but it's literally the only thing left from the case, and they gave it back to John after 27 years of not being able to put it to rest. So you would think there would have been a DNA test done on the head at some point in time during those 27 years, but if no one was questioning the idea that that might not have been Adam's head, why assume that there's a DNA test? Can you imagine how upset John and Reveille would get if police came back yet again and asked to exhume the remains just to double check? I mean, fuck no. Not the way they closed their case so neat and tidy. They made John happy. They're not fucking with this ever again. That would really just put the Hollywood Police Department back into the bad graces of John, which kind of seems to me like they were tired of being in, and that's why they wanted to get it closed without the necessary evidence. So obviously, if we continue deeper down that particular rabbit hole, that perhaps this wasn't even Adam's body and everyone stopped looking for him, could he still be alive? I mean, it's obviously very unlikely, but there's always a possibility, of course, because if you remember the fact that there's no physical body that's ever been identified either, Adam might just be some 46 or 47-year-old man unaware of who he was. I mean, I know that's really reachy. And that would obviously only be in the event that it wasn't Adam's head. So these are some pretty big ifs here, keep in mind. But from what I can tell of the case, there's absolutely no DNA, no evidence, no credibility. And because of this, Otis nor anyone has actually ever been charged with Adam's murder, despite all the times Otis said he did it. Both Otis and Jeffrey have since died in prison, and no one else was ever really looked into. I mean, I'm sort of making it sound like the case isn't closed, but it's totally closed. They're not going to keep looking. I personally am not as comfortable as John and Reveille seem to be with the investigation or the closing of the case, but at the very least, I'm glad they're happy with it. And we have to remember that even though Adam didn't get his own true justice, his death absolutely did not go in vain, and in a way, he sort of has this pretty awesome legacy if you want to look at all the great things that have happened since Adam was taken from John and Reveille's lives. When America's Most Wanted was taken off the air, they had contributed to the capture of over 1,200 fugitives and hundreds of missing people, including the badass recovery of Elizabeth Smart, as well as Busy Bone. The United States Congress ends up passing a Missing Children's Assistance Act back in 1984, which later helped fund the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which you all know I have to say a million times on every single missing child's case I cover, because they are the ones up in that shit trying to help you. All because John and Reveille. Because of Adam. It's nuts. President Bush actually signed an official law in 2006 that would also enable a, quote, RICO call of action for those who are considered child predators and all those who conspire alongside them. So these offenders actually get categorized into three different tiers, and depending on which tier they're in is how often they will have to update their location or their registry every time they move, which helps us keep track of who we have to look out for. John Walsh has received many awards for all his hard efforts to help victims of crime. He's had a street named after him. He's been credited to assisting in the capture of 17 different men that all made the FBI's most wanted list. At the end of the day, I know the story is crazy, but for realsies, if John Walsh is happy, I am happy. You know, he can't stop finding the bad guys, and he's tried to retire, but honestly, I don't blame him. It's really hard to relax when you know how many bad things are happening at every moment of the day. I mean, even now, with all the child trafficking we have going on these days, I mean, cheese and crackers, how could you stop? John Walsh currently hosts the show In Pursuit with John Walsh. He's still doing the damn thing out there catching those bad guys. You guys, just listen to this. It gets me fucking pumped.
Back in 1981, I had the American dream. The beautiful wife, the house in the suburbs, and a beautiful six-year-old son. And one day I went to work, kissed my son goodbye, and never saw him again. In 2 weeks, I became the parent of a murdered child, and I'll always be the parent of a murdered child. I still have the heartache. I still have the rage. I waited years for justice. I know what it's like to be there waiting for some answers. And over those years, I learned how to do one thing really well. And that's how to catch these bastards and bring them back to justice. I become a manhunter. I'm out there looking for bad guys.
You know, people always say that it's not right to judge how people grieve, especially while they're in the public eye. But, you know, just for future reference, John Walsh's demeanor as a parental victim is exactly what I would expect from a grieving parent. Like, he's the epitome of a truly innocent parent. You've never once seen Scott Peterson, Casey Anthony, Lori Vallow, Diane Downs, Suzanne Smith, Letitia Salk, or even Dior Kuhn's parents act like this, as dedicated as this. It's absolutely telling to me, personally. But that's just me. Thoughts to leave you with? Stop judging those parents who use the backpack leashes. Again, we live in some scary-ass times now. Scary stuff happens all the time, every day. Honestly, it's just better to be safe than sorry. So leash up those brats, people, and feel good about it. Don't fuck people who judge you. They don't understand how scary it is. So the next case is going to be kind of a surprise for you guys. We'll see you back here in 2 weeks with a new one. As always, lock your damn doors. Make sure you guys always keep a close eye on your little ones, okay? And John Walsh for president, you guys. Woo! And that was the tea, you guys. I hope you enjoyed my rendition of the story, and if so, please tell all your creepy-ass friends about it. You can find the sources I use for the episode in its description. You can find me slinging those memes on Instagram at True Crime Queen, posting them daily. If you want to support the podcast, do me a favor and check out patreon.com/gingerthetruecrimequeen. We'll see you back here in 2 weeks with another one. All right, you guys, bye!